We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We dance on the air. We're Dads on the Air.
Welcome to Dads on the Air for the 23rd of June, 2009. Should be an interesting program. Dads on the Air was invited to a forum at New South Wales Parliament House just the other day called Family Law, Is the Man the Loser? Now, of course, there could hardly be a more controversial subject in Australia at the moment than Family Law, Is the Man the Loser? And we were very pleased to be able to speak at that forum. You'll be able to hear the speeches that we gave, both there and Mark Youssef. He's a quite senior Master of Law and Legal Practice and specialising in family law. Really interesting man and a really interesting speech that he gave to the conference, and we're really pleased to be able to play that on the show this morning. And also myself, I say a few words, and Peter will say a few words. Peter Vanderford, Rock and Pop, as we call him, as a wonderful bloke. And Mr. Warwick Marsh, he's from the Dads for Kids Fatherhood Foundation, and he's done a lot of good work over the years as well. Kathleen Swinbourne, who from the Sole Parents Union, was also meant to speak at the forum, but cancelled at the last moment. And Barbara Biggs, who's an author and a campaigner, came on instead. Barbara Biggs has caused a huge amount of controversy in Australia in recent times, campaigning against shared parenting. She's the major voice against shared parenting in Australia at this point in time, and we'll be playing a lot of her next week. So do tune in next week for Barbara Biggs. That would be interesting, but this week we've got our own speeches. Don't forget, you can listen to all this at dadsontheair.net. That is www.dadsontheair.net. Don't confuse us with our old .com site. That's just a defunct site, dadsontheair.net. And it was really interesting that the Fellowship of the Round Table organised this conference. They're a long-established discussion study group with the aim of raising political and cultural consciousness and networking for social change, and they hold regular open forums. It has no links or connections with any political, business, social or religious organisation whatsoever. All funds are spent on printed and internet information and public meetings, and they believe in the importance of culture individually and moral integrity and in the dignity, value and liberty of each person. And they're a really valuable part of a healthy democracy, is these sorts of debates. And we were very pleased to be involved. Their motto is, we serve truth and consensus. Now, I think we will just about go straight. We'll have a short break and we'll go straight into Mark Youssef, which is a fascinating interview. We'll be back.
Always two sides. When someone's telling Good evening, and I'm glad there's such a lovely breathless hush in the air tonight. It sort of tunes in well with the weather. I'd like to welcome everybody to the 11th in the Roundtable Forum series, which has met in Parliament about three times a year since March the 29th, 2006. In our forums deal with issues which are topical, controversial and important. And they're just the kind of issues that would keep you in town late and bring you to the Jubilee Room in Parliament House. And maybe deprive you of your dinner. I'm not sure about that one. The favourite motto is, we serve truth, not consensus. So we have no political ambitions whatsoever, not with that motto. Our topic of this evening's forum, as advertised, is family law. Is the man the loser? And we have five guest speakers. First, in order of appearance, is Mark Youssef. Then we have John Stapleton. Then we have Peter van der Voorde. We did intend to have Catherine Swinburne, but she's been detained because of an illness. So we have Barbara Biggs, who has agreed to speak at very short notice, and we're very grateful for that. And Warwick Marsh. And I think Barbara Biggs will be speaking after Warwick Marsh. Okay, now there is just one more thing, which I have here. And I'd like to emphasise that when the last speaker has finished, we will then take questions, and you put up your hand, and you'll probably be acknowledged if you put your hand up in short order. Short questions, please. Come to the mic. The mic is there. If you come to the mic, you will be heard. That's the way to do it. Just come up to the mic as you're acknowledged, and we won't have to worry with long cords. Now, the first speaker, and I'd like to introduce, is Mark Youssef. Now, Mark Youssef is a part of Armstrong Legal Firm, and he was admitted to the Supreme Court of New South Wales in 2005, and later to the High Court of Australia, holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Macquarie, majoring in philosophy and political science, and a Master of Law and Legal Practice degree from the University of Technology, majoring in family law. Before joining Armstrong in 2008, Mark was exposed to a wide range of areas of the law at previous firms, including civil litigation, wills, estates. Mark now applies this knowledge and skill exclusively to the practice of family law and its related issues. He's a member of the Law Society of New South Wales, a member of the Young Lawyers Family Law Committee, and a member of the Law Council of Australia Family Law Section. I'd like you to welcome Mr. Mark Youssef, please.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. I'd like to first thank the organisers of the Fellowship of the Roundtable for their kind invitation to allow me to address you this evening. And indeed, I'd like to thank each of you for attending and putting up with a lawyer being in your midst for at least a couple of hours. I know it can't be easy, but I would ask you to stick it out to the end if possible. Family law, is the man the loser? I must admit that when I first became aware of the topic, I sarcastically thought to myself, as I would hope many of you did also, goodness, couldn't they have come up with a more controversial and emotive topic? You've really done your homework. Well, it's a lawyer's duty, as per my own strict personal understanding, that a lawyer should always strive to keep controversy and emotion out of their legal practice. But the problem is that, notwithstanding the legislation does, at least in my opinion, keep controversy and emotion by the wayside, the simple fact will always remain that the legislation is designed to impact on people's lives, and indeed the thing that all of us treasure most, and that is the family unit. In addition, there is little doubt that by our very nature we are controversial and emotional beings. When someone asks me about family law, I like to try and simplify it into three main areas. We've got divorce, we've got parenting, and property. Divorce, as you might already know, is simply the dissolution of a marriage that is ordered by the court once a party's able to prove an irretrievable breakdown to that marriage by way of at least 12 months separation. So there's nothing really controversial about that. Where things start to get interesting, though, and people's thoughts start to turn to the notion of winning and losing, is in respect of the other two areas that are inescapably intertwined. However, while I will try to address both, I appreciate that parenting has always been the primary focus of discussion groups such as this, perhaps more than property, so the time I devote to each will be apportioned accordingly. Parenting. Now, in typical lawyer form, I need to refer to the legislation. We have to. I think all lawyers will tell you that one of the very first things that they drum into you at law school is, for goodness sake, always try to have an authority for what you're saying. You always have to. Well, my first authority for this evening is Section 67 capital B of the Family Law Act, which tells us that the man, from the time a child is conceived, is liable to contribute towards the maintenance and expenses of the mother prior to the child being born. Immediately, ladies and gentlemen, we see from the very beginning that the Act refers to a man as being liable, quote unquote, which leads us to the natural conclusion that where there are responsibilities, there must also be rights. So far, in respect of the pre-birth of a child, it is a man's responsibility towards a woman's maintenance and expenses. Strangely enough, though, the Act falls eerily silent in respect of what some might consider to be the man's natural right to be present at the birth of the child. The mother's right, as you will appreciate, will always be present by virtue of her status as the patient. But for a man, he must first be allowed by the mother to engage and be involved in the birth experience of the child. Moreover, while a man is legally liable to contribute towards the maintenance and expenses of the mother, he, of course, has no say in respect of whether the pregnancy is maintained or terminated. Now, I hope you trust me when I say that I do not make that point to reignite the old abortion issue, but I do so only by way of trying to show the differences between the sexes in terms of family law. If we move on, once a child is born, there is no obligation placed on the mother to name the man as the child's father. The same man, mind you, who has been supporting her during the pregnancy. Unless the man has DNA evidence and a court order in hand, the child's birth certificate may remain devoid of a father's identity altogether. Now, while a birth certificate naming the father will be the most common and conventional method of proving paternity, conversely, if a man does not wish to have his name on the child's birth certificate, for instance, because he and his wife have been living separately and apart in different countries for over 9 months, for example, the registrar of the Child Support Agency, the CSA, is also entitled to assume paternity in a variety of circumstances under Section 29 of the Child Support Assessment Act, some of which includes the child was born during the marriage, the child was born to a woman within 44 weeks after a purported marriage or period of reconciliation that was no more than 3 months, or the child was born to a woman who cohabited with the man at any time during the period beginning 44 weeks and ending 20 weeks before the birth. So it might very well be the case of being caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time, but bad luck. Then we see the child starts to grow up, and the research tells us that a child will naturally have one primary point of bonding and attachment during what has been labelled as, you might have heard of this before, it's called the tender age doctrine. Now, the mother's right to breastfeed is sustainable and will be respected by the court, spanning the child's birth up until school age, and by the very mechanisms to which I just referred in relation to the exclusion, expressly or implicitly, actively or passively, of the man from the child's life, breastfeeding is another way, rightly or wrongly, of ensuring what results in the exclusivity of parenting, namely the mother's parenting. Personally, I think we all might be forgiven for finding the situation rather troubling, especially in light of sociological and behavioural studies that suggest that if a man has not established a meaningful relationship with a child by the time that particular child turns 6 or 7 years of age, it is extremely difficult, if not impossible, to do so thereafter. The child becomes so engaged after that age with developing social networks and interdependency relationships, primarily at school, as you would appreciate, that the father is placed in a pool of people vying for the child's attention, closeness, and longing. The mother, on the other hand, does not have to worry in that regard, since the child has already developed that bond with her from birth as the child's primary carer. Now, the tender age doctrine that I mentioned earlier has existed for many years. It's nothing new. The court is often faced with a situation where the child has been with the mother as the primary carer for the first few years of the child's life, which then begs the obvious question, do we really need to rock the proverbial boat? The child is doing fine, and it is, of course, the child's best interest that is the paramount consideration for the court. The notion of increased incremental time between man and child from around the time the child starts school may seem well and good, but by that time, according to the tender age doctrine, it is often too late for the man to make the sort of significant gains he would like to make in bringing up his relationship with the child to the same level of significance of that shared between mother and child. Then, after the child has reached the age of majority, has just turned 18, the man believes his child support liability has ended. Well, think again. I recall a couple of years ago, I was in my car listening to the radio when a new song started playing by a very popular R&B/hip-hop/rap artist. The song, by the way, was most tactfully titled Gold Digger. Yes. And the one verse that rang most loudly in my ears went along the lines of, and I quote, 18 years, 18 years, she got one of your kids, got you for 18 years, end quote. Well, notwithstanding the factual inaccuracies of the claims made by the singer, and quite possibly his crimes against good grammar and spelling, I understand the song went on to become a number one hit worldwide. You see, many men have a hard time reconciling their continued liability towards over-18's maintenance, pursuant to Section 66L of the Family Law Act, which requires the liable parent, much more often the man rather than the woman, to pay towards the adult child's educational, mental or physical disability. Further, it is commonly and correctly understood in our society that simply because a man does not spend time with his children, it does not exonerate him from paying child support. In fact, the less number of nights the children spend with their father, the more in child support he has to pay. The Child Support Agency publishes an annual report of their facts and figures. Now, I would ask you at this stage a bit of a curly question in regards to, would anyone care to take a guess at the percentage of male payer parents compared to female payer parents 10 years ago, back in 1998-99? Anyone?
95%
there. 95%. Anyone else? So, anyone else? Lucky third, anyone?
10 to 1.
10 to 1? Well, the answer is approximately 91% of payer parents were male and 9% were female. Would anyone care to take a guess at the percentages for 2006-07?
87-13.
The answer is approximately 88% of parents were male. I think you've looked that up before. And 12% were roughly female. So it seems male payer parents are slowly but surely making inroads in levelling the playing field. However, at that rate, by my calculations, if current trends continue, we will eventually see 50% of male and 50% of female payer parents by the year 2102. Yes.
Does it take into account private arrangements?
I believe it does. They're the statistics on the CSA website. But in between the conception of a child and that child becoming an adult, there arises the additional issue of relocation of the child as well. In a recent study conducted by Professor Patrick Parkinson, widely known in amongst family law circles as being one of the most prolific and respected researchers and commentators in this area, it was found that the court had allowed the relocation of children in 53% of all such cases since July 2006, when the shared parental responsibility reforms had taken effect. Now, the research suggests that men will often and eventually sacrifice their careers post-separation from their partners in order to follow their children's relocation. The study also suggests that women have a tendency to become more mobile, if I can call it that, post-separation, while many men, simply given to proposals of relocation because of the great costs involved in conducting the great courtroom battle in that regard. It is nothing short of mind-boggling that the study reveals that from that small survey sample of 80 participants, it cost the average participant approximately $66,000 to have the matter judicially determined. And there was one lucky participant who recorded an expected estimate of, wait for it, $450,000 to $500,000. If that was not shocking enough, it is astonishing to realise that after a relocation matter is determined, where the mother is allowed to relocate with the children, Professor Parkinson's report suggests that compliance by the mother as to contact arrangements between the father and children remains a significant problem in the aftermath of relocation disputes. In so many cases, men become increasingly disinterested and even estranged from their children due to compliance issues that arise because of distance and conflict with the mother. I personally consider that a very sad situation indeed. If I may turn to property matters very briefly, the family court primarily bases its decision on two main considerations, one being the contributions of the parties during the relationship and indeed the marriage, and also the future needs of the parties. Now, in the event of equal contributions having been made by the parties over the course of a marriage, as family lawyers, we more often than not, and I speak for, I believe, the great majority of family lawyers, find that there is an adjustment of property in property settlement made in favour of the wife due to such things as lower earning capacity compared to the husband. And of course, as you might have guessed by now, the fact that the wife has the care and control of a child of the marriage. When all is said and done, ladies and gentlemen, it is very easy for us to sit here and criticise family law, perhaps justifiably. But there is little doubt that recent changes in the law, primarily the Family Law Amendment Shared Parental Responsibility Act of 2006, by saying that quickly five times, has at least set men on what I consider to be the road not necessarily leading to complete equality per se, but a type of quasi-equality of recognition. I believe it is important for us to remember a number of things in regards to our judgments and perceptions. Firstly, the new laws haven't really been around for that long. Statistics haven't really been given the opportunity of catching up to the reality and implementation of the shared care presumption in parenting matters. Secondly, I believe it may very well take a generational change of the bench, and indeed society as a whole, for that matter, for the full effect of legislative change to take full effect. And thirdly, domestic violence seems like it will always be a determinative factor in family law cases. According to a judicial officer at the Sydney Registry recently, it is estimated that over 50% of all cases brought before the court involve allegations of domestic violence in one form or another. Now, while many allegations may be supported by evidence, there's no escaping that, it is notable that as much as 50% of those allegations are not proven. But by that time, it is too late for the man, because an allegation of domestic violence rebuts the presumption of shared care in parenting matters. According to an article in the Sydney Morning Herald last month, a Sydney University academic, Leslie Lang, said that almost 50% of Australians surveyed, and I quote, believed women in custody battles, made up or exaggerated claims of abuse and violence, even though the evidence was to the contrary. Well, that may be. While it is by no means a criticism of the topic organisers this evening, the topic itself presupposes that because there is a loser in family law, our powers of deduction tell us that there must be a winner. But that is the fatal flaw in this topic. I'm here to tell you tonight that as a person who lives and breathes family law on a daily basis, yes, on most weekends too, there are only pyrrhic winners in family law, or put another way, there are only varying degrees of loss. Essentially, it is a matter of who loses less. But in every which way you look at it, the man and the woman, and the children, if any, always come out of family law proceedings as losers for having submitted their destiny, at least in some way, to the courts and not their own wills. Thank you.
That, of course, was Mark Youssef, a wonderful speaker at the forum at Parliament House in Sydney last Tuesday, which we all attended here. A couple of representatives were there from Dads on the Air. That was Mark Youssef speaking, a well-known barrister in Sydney. As he correctly points out, fathers have no rights to being at the birth of their child. They have no right to having the name on their birth certificate, and they have no right to the DNA to established fatherhood. Mothers are only seen as the primary carer to the exclusion of the father from birth. They're important issues to that affects fathers, and they certainly haven't been corrected as yet. We're going to go to a short break now, and we'll come back with yours truly and John Stapleton, who represented Dads on the Air at the forum, and I hope you find that interesting.
Second speaker in our lineup this evening will be John Stapleton, and John Stapleton is founder of the program Dads on the Air. Dads on the Air is broadcast at station 2GLF Community Radio 89.3. If you want to bone up on that afterwards, I'm sure you can get that information. Welcome John Stapleton, please.
Well, thanks everybody for coming on such a cold night, and what an excellent speech, really interesting, thanks. Just to clarify, in case anyone hasn't realised, there was a poster that was unfortunately incorrect, and I was labelled as the founder of Dads in Distress, so if anyone's under that illusion that I was the founder of Dads in Distress, that's most certainly not the case. I was the founder of Dads on the Air. Tony Miller, who is the founder of Dads in Distress, is here in the audience, just here, so that anybody who wanted to talk to him afterwards would be able to hear the coalface story, basically. John Flanagan from Fairness and Child Support and Wayne Butler from the Shared Parenting Council are all here if people wanted to continue the conversation with them. And yes, certainly. I'd like to thank the organisers, of course, for for this whole event. It's been really a wonderful opportunity, and everyone else who's helped put the event together. For those of you who don't know, Dads on the Air is a community radio program run out of 2GLF in Liverpool and Western Sydney, which by dint of pure perseverance has become the longest running father show in the world. Our topic today is The Man, the Loser in Family Law, is shorthand for the much broader debate on whether the style of custody order most common in the family court and most family courts around the Western world, that is sole mother custody, is really the best for our kids, and whether or not the almost universal anti-father bias in our public institutions in child support, child protection, family law, of course, and legal aid is producing the best outcomes. There isn't much doubt family law is biased against men, unless you want to discount the voices of hundreds of thousands of fathers here and around the world. Dads on the Air would not exist if family law was not biased against fathers. It was the collective outrage of a group of heartbroken men, which meant when the opportunity came up back in 2000, we started the Dad Show. We've gone on to attract a talented team of journalistic, entertainment and internet experience. The first few years must have been a bit of a strain on the audience, with long spiels against the impacts of family law and elaborate deconstructions of domestic violence or anti-father ideologies. None of us had any radio experience, but we have been fortunate to find ourselves in an era when there has been plenty of material to broadcast. We have made mistakes. The program today is very different to what it once was. While we continue to follow Australian family law and child support issues more closely than any other media outlet, we also pursue more broader debates. Dads on the Air has been proud to broadcast a range of voices little heard in the mainstream, as well as having politicians, authors and academics whose voices, at least on these subjects, are often ignored by gender study courses and journalists alike. Dads on the Air was born not just out of a sense of injustice, but out of frustration with the mainstream media's failure to take men's issues seriously, often confusing social affairs reporting with feminist causes. We've also been proud to provide an outlet for a number of groups, including the Shared Parenting Council of Australia, the Men's Rights Agency, the Fatherhood Foundation, Fathers for Equality, Fairness in Child Support, Lone Fathers, and Dads in Distress, mostly sad dads who want to see more of their kids. The whole rave about what evil black shirt bastards these people are, if you meet any of them, it's exactly what they are, sad dads who want to see more of their kids. The single most barbaric thing any civilization can do to its citizenry is the removal of children, yet this happens every day. They're told it is in their children's best interests. These men often show signs of post-traumatic stress disorder, repetitive, obsessive, fragile, fighting injustices they have no hope of solving. We broadcast their voices, taxi drivers, teachers, firemen, policemen. It does the country no good to have such a large body of such disaffected people. But we've also tried to be open to the many complexities of the debate, and guests have included Diana Bryant, the Chief Justice of the Family Court, the then Attorney General Philip Ruddock, the head of the Family Law Inquiry, Kay Hole, and many others. Over the years, we've also broadcast some of the world's best-known fathers activists, including Fathers for Justice founder Matt O'Connor, the brain behind Britain's most sensational stunts, including climbing Parliament House, Buckingham Palace and bridges across England, author of Family Court Hell, Mark Harris, jailed for waving at his children as they drove past him on the street, and don't think very similar things don't happen here. Recent guests, such as Professor Stephen Baskerville, author of Taken into Custody, argues the long march for the institutions is almost complete and the divorce regime compromises the most totalitarian institutions ever to arise in Western democracies. Families have been systematically portrayed as dangerous places for women and children. Men have been systematically propagandized as violent, abusive patriarchs or historical relics. Separated men have been ridiculed as nothing but aggrieved litigants. He argues the divorce industry is a serious perpetrator of human and constitutional rights. No violations, no political parties and no politicians question it. No mainstream journalists investigate it in any depth. Other guests have included John Hurst, author of Kangaroo Court, Family Law in Australia, who tracks the public perception as a wonderfully progressive court, which it most certainly was seen in the 70s as a very progressive institution, to become in the noughties, as they say, one of the country's most hated institutions. He said, quote, "I cannot see the way by which the court can be rescued. Until there is fundamental change, it will continue to give offence." Commentators such as Warren Farrell, author of several books, including The Myth of Male Power, Why Men Are the Disposable Sex, and Father and Child Reunion, have provided unique deconstructions of the domestic violence, child abuse, child support, family law, and social welfare industries, all predicated on the vilification of men. He claims the traditional image of male as oppressor is inaccurate and has hindered both genders, leaving men feeling undervalued and women angry. We've also interviewed many women critical of the anti-father bias in family law, including, most fascinatingly, Erin Pitsey. She was the founder of the first women's refuge in Britain, and she's been very critical of the way the refuge movement has been used to perpetuate a radical anti-male agenda. We've also interviewed a number of non-custodial mothers. Recently, one mother, Diana, who copped all the false allegations and alienating behaviour commonly perpetrated on fathers, brought tears as she spoke at parking opposite a school just in the hope of catching a glimpse of her children. And that is something that many fathers know of, parking somewhere so they can just catch a glimpse of their kids after school. How sad is that? It is telling that amongst academics who have come on the show, the University of Western Sydney is the only dedicated men's study unit in the country. It's the Men's Health and Information Resource Centre. John McDonald and Michael Woods have examined the poor outcomes amongst separated men, who of course have very high death rates and very poor health outcomes, while Men's Health Australia has argued for gender-neutral approaches to domestic violence. This is but a small example of the numerous authors and groups we've interviewed, many focusing on the impacts of family law and its anti-father bias. It is common, perhaps even fashionable in family law circles, to blame the litigants for their own problems. The fact they're silly enough to get bound up in complex and expensive family litigation is sniffed at. But unfortunately, separated parents have to have family law orders in order to gain payments through Centrelink or that much-reviled institution, the Child Support Agency. Nothing sends a shiver up a politician's spine more than the sight of a separated dad clutching a large file of legal documents, making a beeline for him or her at a public function. For these things are insoluble. Their grief and their sense of aggrievement cannot be assuaged by a few rote letters to department heads. Family law creates an enormous well of pain. How can this politician help this poor bastard who has just been through the worst time of his life, who has lost his children, his home, much of his assets and income, his dignity, his social position, his sense of self-worth? The issues which affect men are not being addressed. One simple example. On the Dads on the Air website, we have a counter which estimates the number of clients of the Child Support Agency who die every day. We estimate the figure, and it's based on the previous FOI material, at around 12 a day, and that's probably an underestimate. That's more than 5,000 since Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister. We're not saying all of these are suicides in any way, but we are saying that with these with onerous payments and with these terrible situations that these blokes end up in, their health is very poor, they often don't have money to do simple things like go to the dentist, and the outcomes are very, very bad. Every father's group in the country has linked family law and child support with a high death rate among separated men. Where are the inquiries? Where's the concern? We covered the family law process in Australia, begun by the previous Howard government, closer than any other media outlet. There was ample evidence during the family law inquiry, including most powerfully from many grandparents, of the pain the present system creates. We interviewed many people who hoped the well of misery would be resolved. It is deeply unfortunate in our view that the previous Howard government balked at true reform of family law despite widespread public support, and even those modest reforms keeping fathers and children's lives could now be wound back, and there's certainly a fair movement in that direction. But at least now a detailed record of the hopes and frustrations of so many people is actually online, documented, undeniable, and also recorded in the National Library in Canberra for any researchers of the future. I often wonder how younger generations of fathers, those you now see walking their kids to school or in shopping malls with their children climbing all over them, so different to the stern father of the 50s that I grew up with, will deal with all of this. Surely there are enough cautionary warnings to suggest further reform is needed, so broken-hearted dads and children unnecessarily deprived of their fathers becomes a thing of the past. All is not lost, but governments are wise to listen to the voices of the people over those of their own taxpayer-funded academic, bureaucratic and judicial elites. I hope when the history of all this is written, Dads on the Air will be seen as having had a civilising influence on the debate, making available voices and points of view which may otherwise have been ignored. Men are the losers under the present family law regime, but so are we all. And thank you. Next up, we're just sharing the time with Dads on the Air. Here is Peter Vanderford, a very proud dad of five girls, and a really wonderful contribution he's made to Dads on the Air. So it's Peter Vanderford next.
Okay, thank you very much, John Stapleton. Peter Vanderford is a producer and presenter of Dads on the Air, Australia, and he's a singer, songwriter, a lifetime involvement with the entertainment industry, and following the recording of his album, Our Stolen Children, in 2006, he joined the on-air team of Dads on the Air then, and has been a regular presenter and co-producer of this popular radio program for the past 3 years. Welcome, Peter Vanderford. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great honour to be invited to speak to you tonight, especially on the topic of family law, is the man the loser? It's certainly a very emotive subject which touches a raw nerve of many people in our community, including myself, and tonight I speak to you as a casualty of what can only be described as a dreadful experiment in social engineering that's gone horribly, horribly wrong. Mm-hmm. Family law is the man the loser. Well, of course he is, because the only winners in family law are those involved with the administering of family law, which has now ballooned into a multi-billion dollar international industry. Unfortunately, and contrary to community perceptions, in the jurisdiction of family law, equality and justice is missing in action. And the real losers are the many millions of responsible non-custodial parents around the world who have been forcibly removed from their biological children against their will by this very industry. So as to the question, is the man the loser? I would have to say a resounding yes, but qualify that by saying he is not alone, because equally so are the many non-custodial mums. And the greatest losers of all in this are those who do not have a voice of their own and who rely on us to speak for them in the hope that somehow they can escape the nightmare they are forced to live in. I speak, of course, of the children. What drives non-custodial parents like myself is grief, pain and absolute outrage that this should be allowed to happen in the 21st century. And it saddens me greatly to witness the continuing lack of community awareness, because these are human rights violations. And denying its citizens their fundamental human rights are the policies of a morally failed state, which are universally regarded as unacceptable. However, historically, we've been here before many times, and sooner or later the tide's going to turn. It took many years for the world to recognise the injustices perpetrated against the indigenous populations. We saw that with slavery, apartheid, the black civil rights movement, and the injustices against the Jews by Germany. These injustices were also ignored for many decades due to community ignorance. And unfortunately, we're repeating the same injustices under another name, against a different group, but again we witnessed this community ignorance. Saying sorry to one deserving dispossessed group, while at the same time completely ignoring the dispossession taking place right under our noses, smacks of hypocrisy, and I find that contemptible. I fully applauded the long overdue apology to the Stolen Generation and the Indigenous population. The fact that it took us 200 years to understand the damage we inflicted on this vulnerable group by denying them their fundamental human rights for so long is a sad indictment on the level of our compassion and empathy. Unfortunately, just like today, during these 200 years of community ignorance, the voices of reason were ridiculed and brushed aside. It's estimated that the Stolen Generation numbered approximately 50,000 children. We now know the horrendous ramifications of this best on interest of the children policy debacle, which ironically was administered by someone with the title of Protector of Aboriginals. But sadly, the figure of 50,000 children representing the Stolen Generation pales into insignificance when compared with the current level of forcible separation of children from their parents. And let me give you some clear evidence to illustrate the depth of the problem. According to the latest ABS figures, there are now almost 700,000 Australian children who have little or no meaningful contact with their non-custodial parents. And there are 312,000 non-custodial parents who no longer have any meaningful contact with their biological children. Add the estimated 1.5 million extended family members, such as grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins and so on, who were also denied their contact with members of those their families, you find that more than 2.6 million of the nation's citizens are already affected. And that's a pandemic. And the current so-called protector of the best interest of the children, the Family Court of Australia. And incredibly, both parents and children have been forced to go cap in hand to this state institution for more than 30 years now, only to walk away with bloodied noses. And without parenting rights and stripped of their children and family wealth, which has left them financially and emotionally destitute, many parents are forced to walk away in utter despair or risk facing a jail term. Then, to add insult to injury, they're offensively labelled as deadbeat parents and are mercilessly persecuted by heartless child support agencies. No scientific evidence has ever been produced anywhere in the world to show that large numbers of non-custodial parents are voluntarily abandoning their children. Yet, this is what is being promoted by those who wish to continue with the current failed policies. And while individual examples of any reprehensible behaviour can always be found anywhere, such as domestic violence and sexual abuse, they should never be used to be allowed to be promoted as being representing the behaviour of the majority group. It comes as no surprise then that so many of our children are neglected and abused in our community. It occurs because checks and balances have been removed by allowing the forced removal of hundreds of thousands of responsible, protective and loving parents from their children. And I put to you this simple question: how on earth are responsible non-custodial parents supposed to meet their duty of care and responsibility obligations to their children when the state allows these children to be removed from them but with absolute impunity. This has to stop. This is absolute madness. How much longer do we think we can continue to keep on removing up to a quarter of the nation's children from their ties of kinship with half of their families before it starts to tear apart the very fabric of our own society? No society can withstand a sustained attack on the biological bonds of its citizens and escape the inevitable consequences. Yet we stand idly by and allow a dictatorial family law industry to continue to impose its perverted will on our society. How much longer are we going to accept the insane notion that the best interest of a child is somehow best served by leaving them in the care of a sole custodial parent, when the outcome of this little gem is that many, not all, but many of these parents then set out to coerce the child through a process of emotional and psychological manipulation to hate their other parent and other much-loved members of their families, resulting in a situation where, usually within 2 years, there is little or no more meaningful contact with that parent. Up to a quarter of the Western world's children are now growing up in an environment where hating the other parent is encouraged and rewarded. These vulnerable children know that in order to survive, they have to go along with this doctrine of hate, and the psychological effects on the children of forcibly having to exist in the toxic atmosphere of so much hate can be absolutely devastating. It's no accident that so many of our children are acting out in anger at having been abandoned in a hostile environment by a society which forces them to have to deal alone with complex problems they can't possibly comprehend or resolve. And many of these vulnerable, isolated children are growing up with perverse views and opinions which are based on a distorted perception of reality, forced upon them by a bitter, disturbed, dysfunctional adult. These children, by and large, started out with a deep love for both of their parents, yet are forced to hate and turn their back on half of their family. We simply cannot continue to sweep this injustice aside, turn a blind eye to their plight, and deny them the dignity, support and protection they're entitled to by virtue of existing international human rights conventions. But what is particularly disturbing is the fact that these are outdated laws and better alternatives are available, with other countries already well ahead of us. In Belgium, for instance, both responsible separated parents are now legally recognised as equal primary care parents, who each continue to share a near equal percentage of primary care parenting time with their children following separation. And if one parent refuses to hand the children over to the other parent at the agreed time, it's seen as abduction or kidnapping, which is a criminal offence, and it becomes a police matter. And habitual offenders face a 2 months jail term. That is justice and equality. If we consider ourselves to be responsible members of a civil society but continue to give up on these children, then we've given up on our own deeply held values, abandoned our own identity, and discarded our own humanity. And we need to seriously ask ourselves which principles of human decency we are still willing to uphold. Or are we as a community now so blind, ignorant and uncaring that we no longer are able to comprehend how it would feel if it happened to us? Do we not realise that if we continue to passively accept this evil amongst us without protesting against it, then we are, in effect, as guilty as the perpetrators? So in the interest of the vulnerable and helpless children of today, who are the parents and leaders of tomorrow, I strongly urge you to consider that we no longer deny our children their fundamental human right to love and be loved by both of their parents. Because if we continue to fail them, then history is going to judge our generation very harshly. In the meantime, until there is real justice and equality in the jurisdiction of family law in Australia, I will continue to regard not only men, but all responsible parents, both men and women, and especially the children, as losers. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter van der Voort, for that excellent speech.
You're listening to 2DLF in Sydney with Dads on the Air program. Of course, we're playing the speeches that we recorded last week, which we presented at the Fellowship of the Round Table Forum in Parliament House in Sydney last week. I hope you're enjoying the speeches given by a number of speakers. And next we have Warwick Marsh, who also presented an excellent... he did a bit of music as well, which was very entertaining. Don't forget that our program can be heard and will be up on our website within 24 hours at dadsontheair.net, and there's much other material on there which you might find interesting. Next week, don't forget, we'll be playing the second half of this informative forum, which will be featuring Barbara Biggs, of course. How can I forget? Thank you, John. And of course, also Question Time, which followed all the speakers, and you'll be hearing some interesting questions posed, and especially asked of Barbara to explain some of the assertions that she made. Anyway, we'll go back to the forum after a break.
Don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses and the orders that are given to court on enforce. A kangaroo court full of lawyers who know the tactic of the lay will make you go slow. This will drain all your money and cause you great distress. It will leave you exhausted and emotional mess. If you don't have the children, you don't stand a chance. Abuse of our kids, it will only enhance an industry of misery that does not make sense, except to all those getting rich at our expense. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce. Whoever has the kids can do what they like, as an impotent court allows them this right. A failed institution claims to uphold the rights of our children. It's a choke and it's told. It's not about justice, it's not about law. If you're without the kids, you've drawn the short straw. Those getting rich from our demise stand condemned. So don't feed the greedy. Instead, we recommend that you don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce. Every lawyer tells you that you're gonna win the case, but if you haven't got the children, you're not in the race. Unless residential parents are made to comply, you wasted all your money and can kiss your kids goodbye. Any changes made to the family law will be totally useless when they're allowed to ignore. Compliance is the key, without this you've lost. You won't see the children at all at great cost. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you're given, the court won't enforce. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you're given, the court won't enforce.
Hey man, don't worry, be happy. Let's have another smoke, man. Don't worry, be happy. Let's smoke.
Oh, that smoke's so good, man.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
The next guest in line is Warwick Marsh. Warwick Marsh, along with his wife Alison, founded Dads for Kids and the Fatherhood Foundation in 2002. Warwick has a background in music and creative communication. Since 1990, he's worked in the not-for-profit sector, and in 2001 received the Centenary Medal from the Governor-General for his work in Aboriginal reconciliation, youth and music. Since establishing Dats for Kids and the Fatherhood Foundation, Warwick and Ellison have worked with children and families all over Australia to help turn the tide of fatherlessness. They have played an active role in the development of child-friendly public policy for the greater good of all. Welcome, Warwick Marsh, please.
It's great to be with you. Really appreciate the invitation, and it's a great honour to be among such illustrious people. Yes, you're all illustrious, you know that? Didn't know that, did you? You really are, yeah. And again, thank you so much for the privilege. I'm a musician, well, one of those people that's a try-hard musician. And so I thought it's, well, you know, we probably need to kick off with a song, you know. And got to take my watch off. I don't want to eat into my very, very tight time schedule here. But indeed, music is a wonderful thing. In fact, it says that Shakespeare says that music calms a savage beast. So indeed, I thought perhaps because this is a topic about family law, and I'm sure that I can see a lot of men in the audience, I thought, well, maybe we should sort of start off with a blues song. Was slightly depressing. I've been to the family law court, you know, and I feel so bad, so, 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 so bad, so bad, so bad, so bad, so bad. You're taking this too seriously, everybody, because I got those family law court blues. I don't know what to choose, oh yeah. Now, we can't have that, can we? So I thought we'd just do something a little bit different, if I may. And I was sort of thinking, well, what happened? How did we get to this place where we've got this sort of gender war happening in our nation? And it's probably expressed very much in the family law courts. And, you know, I can remember reading a case back in, I think, about 1860. It was actually the transcript of a case, and the story was that a man was divorcing his wife, and she appeared in court with two broken arms, and she had bruises and everything else. And the transcript of the court went something like this, that the man was very upset with his wife, and he had enough of her, and so he kicked her down the stairs, and he broke her arms. And of course, at the time, women were just chattels, and she didn't have a leg to stand on. And really, in many ways, that's why we had the suffragettes movement, thank God for them. And that's why we had the early feminist movement, thank God for them, because they actually brought a little bit of balance to the world, didn't they? And we're very, very thankful for them. I'm just reading about Edith Cowan. Who's ever heard of Edith Cowan here today? Anybody? There's a few educated people. Edith Cowan was the first woman member of parliament in Australia. She was born in Western Australia. Very first woman member of parliament, I think in about... was it 1824, 25? And she was a fighter for women's rights, and she was also a fighter for women's health, which I applaud her for 100%. She's got a university named after her, Edith Cowan University. And as it happens, the reason I was sort of interested in her, because I'm including her in my speech tomorrow, because I'm speaking at Federal Parliament. I'm sorry I was late, everybody. I'm actually doing running a forum in Parliament House, and it's about men's health. It's about how men are dying 5 years younger than women. It's about all the problems that men are facing in our society in many different ways. And, of course, part of the problems surface with bad health outcomes. And I was looking for someone who could be a hero and a bit of encouragement for me, and I chose Edith Cowan to be someone I can look up to. But I was just trying to think, why have we got ourselves in this place where we had this gender war? And, of course, you go back to that story I was telling you, you find that... that women were treated very badly. And I was just thinking, why was this reaction? Why was this reaction? So I started thinking, looking at songs, and I came up with this song. It's a song that I helped write. And if you know the chorus, you can join with me, okay? Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. Can you just crack a smile for me, please? Help me. Just sort of smile a while and give your face a rest. I used to have a girlfriend, but she just could not compete with all of those love-starved women. It's really great to see someone smile and give that woman a clap. You get clamoring at my feet. Well, I probably could find me another, but I guess they're in all of me. Who cares? I never get lonesome, 'cause I treasure my own company. Can you sing the chorus? Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. It must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. Can you give yourselves a clap? I was very excited that Barbara, you were here tonight, because I share your passion particularly for those that have been sexually abused, and I noticed you've written some works on that subject and moved in that area, and I congratulate you for that, because it's something that's very, very close to my wife and myself's heart. We actually did I won't come across and give it to you now, but later on, give you this DVD from a sexual integrity forum we held at Parliament House. I worked with Jenny George from the left, the Labor Party, and actually Concetta Ferravanti Wells from the right of the Liberal Party. Amazing how you can get people together on certain issues, isn't it? It's wonderful to see that. And working with those people and many other different people in Parliament House, because I believe one of the greatest scourges that we do have in our nation is child abuse. And I'm sure we'd all agree with that. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Let's make this really clear, okay? Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know something, child abuse comes from both sides of the fence, unfortunately. But certainly we men have got a lot to answer for in some of those areas. And I actually apologised at the forum. I said, listen, there was ladies and men there, and I got up and I said, listen, if there's ladies here that have been hurt and wounded, and of course there was a lady who was a prostitute and a lady who was running a brothel who was not running a brothel anymore. She was Linda Watson, who was reaching out to these women who were broken, and many of them have been abused, many of them have been wounded. And you know, we've got to learn to make room for those that have been broken and those that have been wounded, and fight for our children and fight for their rights, which are very, very important. Family man, family law is the man the loser. Couldn't help but agree with you, Peter, your last statement that, you know something, I actually believe that yes, men are losers. Yes, women are losers, and so are our children. Our children lose the most. You know, I'm looking here at the back of the room. I'm seeing Tony Miller, who's a very good friend of mine. He runs Dads in Distress. And he's going to start the meeting tomorrow. He doesn't know it yet, but he's going to tell a story. He tells a story everywhere he goes. And he tells the story of Crystal, if I'm right. Is that right, Tony? 16 years of age. And Crystal came from a home that was divided. And we're fighting all the time. And there were shocking things going on. And of course, the parents broke up. And Crystal got very depressed. She came home from school one day, and the family home was up for sale. correct me if I get the story wrong, by the way, Tony. The family home was up for sale, and she got a can of petrol. No, it wasn't petrol, it was methylated spirits, wasn't it, Tony? And she got a can of methylated spirits, the house was empty, and she walked in the front door, she broke into the house, literally, and she walked around, and maybe she was thinking about the times they had as a family together. Maybe she was thinking about the good times. Maybe she was thinking about the bad times. Maybe she was thinking about when she was a little girl and she was playing with her daddy on the lounge. Maybe she was thinking about the times when they had pancakes around the family dinner on a Sunday night. I don't know what's wrong with the family. I don't think even Tony knows. And possibly Crystal doesn't know either. But Crystal basically got this methylated spirits and just started pouring it all over the carpet of this house that was now deserted. And she struck a match and she was burnt alive. And Tony tells that story in every DIDS meeting, and they have this minute silence because, you know something? Who are the losers in family law when families break up?
Children.
The children. All the time. Now, you might detect a little bit of passion in my voice. It's because I know what it's like to grow up in a family that World War III. Wonderful father. Anyone got a wonderful father out there? Had a wonderful mother. She's still alive, thank God. She's down in Tasmania. Anyone got a wonderful mother? But they couldn't get on. Has anyone been there and grown up in that situation? I won't ask you to put your hand up. But it's a terrible situation to see the people you love fighting each day. And, of course, by the time I got to high school, I'd been to 13 different schools. That's a lot of schools for a young boy to go to, isn't it? In fact, I'd been around the world twice because my mum was Scottish and dad was English and, well, English-Australian. Thank you very much. I appreciate that five-minute mark. Indeed, I went to Scotland because mum was Scottish. I thought everyone lived with their grandmother. But everyone doesn't live with their grandmother, do they? But I was living with my grandmother. I can remember going to Killarbilly Public School. I walked into public school and they called me and my brother, who was 2 years younger than me. I was 10, he was 8. They said, "Oh, we're going to take you away and put you in a home." And I said, "Why?" "Oh, well, your mum and dad are fighting." Well, I knew that. They were fighting. Didn't fight so much like this, although mum did draw blood on my dad once, so that was pretty horrible to see that. But I never saw my dad hit my mum. He was a man at peace, and obviously, there was a war still, but he was a man of peace. But, you know, it's still wrong, isn't it, when people fight? It's still wrong when people argue. And, of course, they're going to put me in a home. And, you know, mum and myself, my little brother, had a good set of lungs. And we just started crying. And we just didn't stop crying. And we just cried and cried for 2 hours. And guess what? They realised that we did love my mum, we did love our dad, and we want to stay with them both. And that's the wish of every child out there. Yes, there's cases out there of terrible child abuse and there's terrible situations do go on. But you know something? The great majority of families that are breaking up, they're not breaking up because of violence. They're breaking up because the parents are just fighting. And they're arguing and they refuse to get on. Or maybe things happen, there's betrayal, there's a sexual betrayal or some other sort of betrayal or whatever it is. And great hurt is caused to those children as families do break up. So I'm passionate for families. I share many of your passion for families today. And yes, I think that men are the losers in the law. In a great percentage of the cases, as I said, I think that basically both the children and the mums and the dads are losers when families break up. Suicidal litigation, I've put the words in the song on our father's album, which recorded in 1999. There's just no easy answers. But I remember a case just recently in Melbourne where a man was put in jail for sending a card to his daughter for 9 days. Can you believe that? And, of course, the shocking case situation where a man was threw his little girl over the edge of that bridge. Who was just struck by that? I was just broken inside when I heard that story. After a custody case, they got this custody, and the next day he threw his little girl over the bridge. I mean, just like, hello, what's going on in this world? The very sad thing, though, is that 3 months before, a woman had strapped the little 2-year-old boy and jumped over that same bridge. But did you hear that in the media?
No.
No. And, of course, we have this filtering system in our media. I noticed a story, and I'm very close to finishing, don't worry. I noticed a story by Dr. Greg Toohey, and he was studying child abuse and how people die and how children die. And he found out that when you remove the biological father, out of the home, or there's a disruption in the family, and that biological father separated from those children, he found out that children are 17 times more likely to die. This is coroner's inquests all over Australia, 17 times more likely to die from death, accidental death, from bruising, from child abuse. The very best way to protect our children is to keep marriages together. The very best way is to support women and mums and dads, and support dads as they go through these situations, before they go in the situations, to train them, to encourage them, to support them. And of course, that's why I'm so passionate about this subject. That's why we started the Father Foundation, to provide linkages, to do courses for men, and to make a case to help men work through the situations they're working through, and also help women. Myself and my wife work with a lot of single mums and try to help them in their time of need. I'm not sure that this is very... It's a very hard question to answer. Family law, is the man the loser? I think we're all losers. I would agree with you, Peter. And we have to build a better society. It's a society that's built on the old-fashioned word, four-letter word called love. Everyone say it with me. L-O-V-E. We've got to learn to love. We've got to learn to stand up for the broken, stand up for those, condemn child abuse wherever it occurs by whatever gender. Because as Bettina Arndt said... Tina Arndt, a great journalist, she said, no gender has a monopoly on vice. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Warwick Marsh. I'd almost forgotten what an entertainer was. Now I know, so my faith lives.
Well, that was certainly the first half of the forum, Family Law, Is the Man the Loser?, organised by the Fellowship of the Round Table. We'd certainly like to thank the organisers, including Marika Alida, for inviting us. It was held at the Jubilee Room in New South Wales Parliament House. It's a beautifully appointed historic room there. And there was about 80 people there, I guess. But,
yeah, probably not quite that, but it was certainly an interesting roll-up, considering it was a very cold night, and it was certainly an interesting subject, wasn't it?
It certainly got them going.
Close to our...
Next week, of course, is the section of the forum which got everybody going.
Yes.
And that is Barbara Biggs. Now, she came in as the very late, after Kathleen Swinburne cancelled at the last minute, Barbara Biggs, who is the single, I would suspect, most controversial figure in family law in Australia today. Do you think that's fair to say?
Barbara Biggs? Mm. Well, she's pushing that way. I think maybe she's being pushed by other people to sort of take a more high-profile role because of her background, and she's written several books, and I guess we're looking for people too with high profiles to speak on behalf of fathers, but they're a bit more reluctant perhaps.
Mm. Anyway, she's an enormously controversial figure, and she also has a fan base as well, so it'll be very interesting. Your own partner has all her books, for instance, doesn't she?
She does, and I've actually read some of them, and she certainly has an interesting background and history, and you can't say that she wasn't abused, but it's interesting. While she speaks about children being abused, and yet she was also abused. She was actually sold by a grandmother to a barrister at 14 years of age, which would not be a pleasant experiment, and that's certainly a child abuse. And yet she speaks. She was unable to see that she was being abused at that time. She was able to leave that house. He left her there, but she didn't leave because, as she well knows, and I think she speaks about that people become attached to the abuser, the people that control them, they become attached to them, and they believe that they have the independence to leave, but they don't do it because they believe that they're dependent on them and they become attached to them. So for her to speak about child abuse and people controlling other people, she should well know that it's, all is not what it seems, and it's not so easy to leave
no,
an abuser.
No, and it does seem a worthy cause, doesn't it?
Of course.
Campaigning to stop child abuse, and but is the family court the appropriate place, or family court? She's campaigning and stirring up a lot of fairly damaged mm-hmm. people into these demonstrations outside the court. I would have thought the only appropriate arena for child abuse allegations and child sexual abuse allegations was the police.
The criminal court.
The criminal justice system.
The
family court doesn't have any proper investigative functions.
Exactly.
It has those psychs who write the family reports, and anybody who's followed this show would...
And they are. They're police matters. And police do that sort of work. You know, and docs and so
they're
on.
They're not family law matters.
No.
And the vast majority of family law cases don't involve these sort of allegations. They're just, you know, your standard bread and butter. We don't love each other anymore. And,
that's right.
Really, the sort of the very serious allegations, and of course there are some terrible stories which she tells of people in abusive situations and claims of children being sent into abusive situations, but. I just think the police are really the most appropriate vehicle. Anyway, you will all be able to make up your own mind about all these controversial issues because we're playing Barbara Biggs next week. She spoke for 25 minutes, and that was followed by a string of questions. And we were very lucky. We were just sitting there. We didn't get any questions. Barbara got the lot. So you could see she was really getting under the skin of a lot of certainly a lot of the blokes that were there. So they were all lining up. Questioning it, and it'll be really interesting to hear that. I think there will be a great deal of interest to hear what she says. I mean, most people have only sort of read the newspaper reports and heard of her name either as an author or as this woman that's leading this demonstration. So it's really revealing to see to hear her firsthand, and we'll bring you that next week. Don't forget, you can listen to all this at www.dadsontheair.net. Please don't confuse it with our long-defunct site.com. It's dadsontheair.net. All this will be going up as well, this forum on YouTube. It should be up by the end of today, we're hoping. You just search basically on the thing, the man that is the man, the loser, and family law, just on YouTube, and there'll be bits and pieces of Barbara Biggs and ourselves and Warwick Marsh and Mark Nicholson will be all up there probably tonight. We'll be back next week. Don't forget, dadsontheair.net. We're dads on the air.